We're the only next-gen battery technology company that ships in the market today. We're really focused on running our own race. You know, until you ship something.
Hallo und herzlich willkommen zu einer neuen Ausgabe von Handelsblatt Disrupt, dem Podcast über neue Ideen, Disruptionen und die Macherinnen und Macher der digitalen Welt. Mein Name ist Larissa Holzki, ich vertrete heute unseren Chefredakteur Sebastian Mattes und begrüße Sie herzlich aus dem Handelsblatt-Studio in Düsseldorf. Die Technologiebranche hat in den vergangenen Jahren ja gewaltige Fortschritte gemacht. Inzwischen trägt jeder von uns mit seinem Smartphone einen kleinen Supercomputer mit sich herum. Ein Bereich hat bei dieser Entwicklung allerdings nicht so richtig mitgehalten, und zwar die Batterien. Sie kennen das Problem sicher genauso gut wie ich. Unterwegs geht viel zu oft der Akku zur Neige. Und das ist, wenn wir ehrlich sind, beim Smartphone natürlich in den allermeisten Fällen einfach nur ärgerlich. Aber wenn es um Elektroautos und die Energiewende geht, dann sind leistungsfähigere Akkus essentiell notwendig. Mein Kollege Stefan Scheuer hat sich deshalb im Silicon Valley auf die Suche nach der Batterie der Zukunft gemacht. Und er ist fündig geworden bei der Firma Sila Nanotechnologies. Der Gründer Gene Berdichevsky war Mitarbeiter Nummer 7 beim Elektroautobauer Tesla und er hat sich vor 10 Jahren selbstständig gemacht, um bessere Batterien zu entwickeln. Nach jahrelanger Forschung kommen jetzt die ersten Produkte auf den Massenmarkt. Bald sollen die verbesserten Batterien in der neuen G-Klasse von Mercedes zum Einsatz kommen und laut dem Unternehmen dann die Energiedichte von herkömmlichen Batterien um 20-40% steigern. Wie das gelingt, das wollte natürlich auch mein Kollege Stefan Scheuer wissen.
Nach einer kurzen Unterbrechung geht es gleich weiter. Bleiben Sie dran.
Sie brauchen Klarheit bei dem Thema CO2-Grenzausgleichsmechanismus? Erfahren Sie, welche Aspekte Sie berücksichtigen müssen, um Bußgelder, unterbrochene Lieferketten und Reputationsschäden zu vermeiden. Klären Sie Ihre Fragen im Hinblick auf die neue Berichtspflicht im Online-Seminar am 6. Mai. Jetzt anmelden und mit dem Code PODCAST 15% bei der Anmeldung sparen. Alles weitere unter live.handelsblatt.com/cbam.
Und damit direkt zu Gene Berdichevsky, dem Chef von Sila Nanotechnologies.
Hi Gene, thank you so much for taking the time.
Hey Stefan, great talking to you.
Great talking to you too. Gene, maybe first of all, could you just take us a little bit through how you started the company in the first place? You've been one of the first employees at Tesla, but you basically dropped out to start your own company. Could you just take us through your process?
I was at Tesla for about 4 years. I was one of the first employees, started with a clean sheet of paper. And after we shipped the Roadster about 4 years later, you know, it was really a decision of to stay and develop the battery system for the Model S, or to kind of take what I learned seeing this company grow from 7 people to 300, you know, from a whiteboard to a product out in the world, and try to do that elsewhere myself. And so I really wanted to do that latter experience. And so I spent a couple years studying material science and looking for really interesting battery technologies really all around the world, until in 2011, I came across a professor at Georgia Tech, Gleb Yushin, who's one of my co-founders and our CTO today. And he had some really interesting technology using kind of unconventional at the time synthesis processes to make next generation battery materials. And we saw this opportunity to take these technologies that had never really been adopted for battery material manufacturing and to make this new class of silicon-based anodes that could dramatically improve performance and do so in a way that was compatible with how batteries are built, how batteries had been built, how batteries are still built, and really sort of upgrade the chemistry to a new level of performance and, really importantly, to a lower cost level as well. And so that's exactly what we did. We started in 2011. And for the last 10 years, we've been building Sila kind of all the way up to this moment now with the announcement of our first automotive scale factory.
Can you just explain why a silicon anode is so significant?
The last 30 years, last 31 years now, of lithium-ion batteries have used the exact same anode chemistry. It's a graphite-based anode. And that comes with certain limitations, really fundamental, universal thermodynamic limitations of how much lithium you can store in that anode material, in that graphite. And the more lithium you can store in the anode material, the higher the energy density of a battery, the more energy you're sort of storing per unit volume. And so, you know, 30 years, we've had the exact same chemistry. It's at its thermodynamic limit. And silicon on an atomic basis is able to store 24 times more lithium per atom of silicon. So it takes 6 carbon atoms to kind of store one lithium atom when the battery is charged. But it only takes one silicon atom to store 4 lithium atoms. So you have this huge atomic advantage. And that translates into, you know, a big weight advantage, translates into a big volume advantage. And so you can shrink the anode inside the battery pretty dramatically, and you can essentially shrink the battery. And what that means is you can use for a battery pack of a given range, you can use dramatically fewer cells. And if you can do that, then you can make the pack lighter, you can make the pack cheaper, or you can make the vehicle go a longer distance if you want to sort of use the same number of cells. So there's lots of different ways you can take advantage of the silicon anode to enable much better EVs. And ultimately, for us to get mass adoption, we need to continue to improve electric vehicles, both in performance, but more importantly, in the cost side of things.
The idea of a silicon anode has been out there for a long time, but the main difficulty has always been that batteries started degrading much more quickly than with traditional anodes. So what's your trick? What did you change in order to make it possible that batteries do not degrade that quickly?
It's usually not one aha moment, though there is a little bit of that in the way we synthesize the material. You know, we spent the better part of a decade running through 55,000 iterations of synthesis on this material structure that we conceived of in order to get the right recipes. And, you know, that part, you know, we spent several hundred million dollars really cracking the scientific code. The sort of idea was silicon has this property where when you charge the battery and the lithium enters the silicon, it expands about 3x. And when you discharge the battery, it contracts again. And that mechanical expansion and contraction is really damaging to the battery. And you're exactly right. The cycle life is really the problem. People were really not able to get more than about 100 uses out of it. And a typical battery delivers about 1,000 full uses. So if you have, you know, a 300-mile range EV, you know, 1,000 full uses gives you 300,000 miles of kind of, you know, warrantyable battery. And so 100 uses just wasn't enough. And so what we conceived of is this material that would have silicon inside of it, and that silicon would be able to expand and contract, but the overall structure, the overall particle wouldn't expand and contract. We would essentially create empty space inside the particle for the silicon to kind of fill up and then contract from. You can think of it as an analogy might be if you had a loaf of raisin bread and the raisins were expanding and contracting and sort of pushing on the, you know, on the bread around it, but the rind kept everything in the same exact shape. And so that's what we did. You know, it's a reasonably simple sounding concept, but synthesizing that is really, really hard. Getting it to work along all battery performance parameters is really, really hard. And then the next stage for us is really the stage of, you know, making it by the thousands of tons and tens of thousands of tons for automotive use. And that's also going to be quite challenging. And that's kind of the stage we're embarking on next.
Yeah. So the first product that you basically use this technology on is Whoop, a fitness device, where you just have a very miniature battery. Why this as the first device? You were always aiming at the car industry.
That's right. So the short answer is scale. But let me back up a little bit. You know, there's really, in order to develop a technology that an energy technology that can have a really big impact on the world, you know, I see it as it has to move through three distinct stages of development. The very first stage is the scientific stage, That's the part where we did 50,000 iterations. We have, you know, 200 or so patents around the material. You know, we cracked the scientific code. The second stage is what I call the market stage. You have to prove that not only did you make some cool science that everyone agrees is interesting, but that people actually want to buy it at a fair price. And the only way to prove that is to get your product into the market. Everything beyond that is just a hypothesis. And so we focused on what is the quickest path we can get to market with our technology. And it turns out the anode material is exactly the same across everything from your AirPods to your phone to your car. And so we picked these fitness trackers as an initial market in order to demonstrate that the technology works on all parameters in the battery. It's good enough to ship commercially. It's been through all the safety testing. It's been through all the qualification testing, all the abuse testing. And, you know, and what we landed on is this particular fitness tracker company that was interested in taking a chance and had a much better product they could make by making their battery smaller. So last year we became, as you mentioned, we became the first next generation battery technology company to actually ship that next generation battery technology in the market. In the Whoop Fitness Tracker, we'll have a few more small consumer devices in the market in the next couple of years. Those are really the proof point that we've passed this market phase, that second stage of making an energy technology that has an impact. And the last stage is scale. That's kind of the stage we're embarking on now. You know, the factory we're announcing, the first phase of it is this 10 gigawatt hour equivalent production, which is enough for, you know, tens of thousands of electric cars, as well as, you know, hundreds of millions of cell phones worth of product. Today we simply don't have that capacity. We have a much, much smaller capacity. We have about 100 times order of magnitude, we have about 100 times less capacity in our Alameda plant. And the Moses Lake plant, each production line will be 100 times the throughput, and we'll have two of those production lines to start, and then we'll expand it over time. So, on your way to scale to make this impact, you really want to take a beat and demonstrate in the market that your technology truly, truly works. And you know, that's why Whoop, even though we've always wanted to be in cars.
And how does your battery that you're now using, or your anode that you're using with the Whoop batteries, how does it compare to the batteries that they were using before? So how much is the benefit of your technology?
So the net impact at the battery level or at the vehicle level for our technology is about a 20% increase in energy density over the state-of-the-art batteries today. The anode itself is a lot better. The anode itself is, you know, almost two times better on a volume basis than graphite. It's five times better on a weight basis than the graphite anode. So the anode itself is, you know, improved 5x or, you know, or more in some parameters. But at the battery level, you know, the anode is one of the components. And so we're making that dramatically better. The whole battery gets about 20% better, which is also a huge, huge difference in performance and the cost impact that can have. Everything from you know, 20, you know, you can simply translate it as a 20% longer range vehicle. You can also sort of translate it as a 20% smaller battery pack and cheaper and lighter.
So now you're starting this new factory. What are you aiming at? Do you already need this larger size even for the Whoop devices?
We have a lot of interest from consumer electronics companies. There's a lot of opportunity there. Every gram we make in our Alameda plant has a home, and we have a lot more demand than we have production. This plant is not dedicated to a single customer. It's really going to cut across all the customers. We've announced our partnerships with Mercedes and BMW. We're working with other automakers that we'll announce in the future as well. You know, ultimately, this technology being not just better performing, but ultimately enabling a lower cost battery is going to be needed across every single one of the auto OEMs, and we do intend to sell to everyone over time. So we do need it. The market is growing really fast, and frankly, we're just trying to catch up to it with this scale. By the time that we get our first 10 gigawatt hours of global capacity kind of online, the market will probably be close to 100 times that or 200 times that. And so we're talking about maybe a fraction of a percent of global capacity. And so we also are looking at how would we expand that footprint in sort of a next stage of investment. This first stage of investment is a couple hundred million dollars. The next stage of investment to get to that sort of 150 gigawatt hour plus capacity, which is about 2 million electric cars worth, that's going to be somewhere between $1 and $2 billion worth of investment. And we obviously don't have that ready to go today, but I think even that will be much too little by the time it's available. And we'll be spending the better part of this decade trying to catch up to the market to catch up to demand.
So what's the time frame then to enter the car market?
Yeah, we have... So we expect these production lines to come online in the second half of 2024. There then is kind of formal validation and the rest that will go through, and we'll have kind of full SOP, full start of production in the first half of 2025. Specific vehicle models, our auto partners will announce those. But what I would say is, depending on the auto partner we're working with and depending on the project, there's anywhere from kind of a 6 to 18 months time frame to do the final validation after our plant is an SOP, right? This is a new to the world plant. And so even though we'll be doing A samples, B samples, C samples, all from our Alameda facility, there's sort of a final validation stage. And so given our full SOP will be first half of 25, you can expect vehicles sort of at the earliest in the end of 25, and sort of at the latest at the end of 26. So that's, between the end of 25 and end of 26, we'll start to see cars on the road with our technology.
You already announced a partnership with BMW and Mercedes. How does this partnership work? I mean, you do not produce a final battery. You are basically in between, and they already have contracts with battery producers. So how does this cooperation work?
Yeah, great question. We ultimately are trying to help them make a better vehicle. And this technology can have a pretty profound impact on the kind of vehicle that they would design and offer to their customers. Because our technology is a complete drop-in into any existing battery factory in the world, we can ship it to any of the battery makers. And both of those auto partners, as well as other automakers, work really closely. They really work hand in hand with cell makers to design the battery for them. And so whoever the producers that supply an automaker today can supply them with a battery with our technology. And so it really comes down to a question of, who does the automaker prefer to work with on integrating Seela's technology? And then we work in a three-party way with the battery makers. But we leave that, ultimately the automaker is the customer. And so they get to decide, what kind of form factor for what kind of platform. And that then dictates which cell maker we ship our material to. But you're ultimately right. We ship our anode material to a cell maker. They integrate it. There's a lot of work that they do as well to make the whole cell and the whole system work. We support that work. We have a lot of battery engineers that support that as needed. But we all have the same goal, which is to make a much, much better car.
So how does it work? Mercedes has contracts, or BMW, they have contracts with big battery companies such as Samsung, such as CATL. Now you come in and say, oh, we're going to replace the anode that Samsung has already produced, or that CATL would normally produce. They cannot be really happy with you jumping into the entire value generation that they have.
Well, so keep in mind, so actually not quite. That's not exactly how the industry works. The battery makers like Samsung, CATL, Panasonic, LG, they buy anode powders from a whole another set of companies. They do not produce any of their anode materials, at least not today, and not historically for the last 30 years. And so really what's happening is they stop buying one black powder from a graphite provider, and they start buying another black powder from Sila. They put it on the same exact equipment, using the same labor, in the same cell form factors, and more energy comes out the other end. In actuality, there's a big benefit that we can provide to cell makers, and we do, which is when you think about the supply chain constraints of electric vehicles. You know, everyone right now is focused, and rightly so, on nickel, lithium, all the raw materials. But as you've seen, you know, as nickel has become more expensive, people just shift to a different chemistry, to iron-based chemistry. And so raw materials are ultimately fungible. Now, you know, there's a limit, but folks are shifting to this iron phosphate chemistry, which really doesn't have much bottleneck from a raw material standpoint. The next limiter in the chain, because it is a chain and it just bottlenecks somewhere else, is battery factories themselves. And so if you're a battery maker and you have a 50 gigawatt hour production facility making high nickel cells, the minute you stop buying graphite and the minute you start buying Sila anode material and producing batteries, your 50 gigawatt hour factory all of a sudden becomes 60 gigawatt hours or 65 without a penny of investment, because every battery coming out the back end is storing more energy. And so in many ways, we can help debottleneck the industry. You know, the same number of batteries can go to make more electric vehicles of a given range. And so that's a huge benefit that our technology can provide to these battery makers as they're making, you know, these massive, you know, tens of billions of dollars in batteries. They can reduce that spend a little bit per gigawatt hour. You know, technologies like iron phosphate actually take it the other way. If you have a 50 gigawatt hour gigafactory making high nickel cells and you switch it to iron, well, all of a sudden, you now only have a 30 gigawatt hour production facility, right? So a technology like this actually carries benefits for the cell maker as well.
Why did you only focus on such a specific part of the battery production? You could go for the entire thing, could you? So what's the long game?
We don't intend to. When you look at the value chain, you know, the battery production is done incredibly well by some of these companies we talked about, Panasonic, you know, LG, Samsung, CATL. There's new entrants like Northvolt. You know, these are companies that are making it, you know, their life's work to make battery cells, and they do such a good job. And so what we wanted to do was focus on where the biggest levers were to make those battery higher performing, but in a way that can still be compatible with those factories. And for us, you know, the investment for us to make 150 gigawatt hours worth of this anode material is about 10 times less than it would be to make 150 gigawatt hours of batteries. And so these other companies who are very good at what they do are already making those investments. And so we can be a lot more efficient investing in just this component that's going to make things a lot better. And so that's, you know, that's, by the way, that's is and will be just a massive market as everything expands. So we're very happy being an anode provider of next generation anodes. But we're also, you know, we'll also over time start to look at other components within the battery with a similar lens. Can we make, you know, a next generation? Again, we're not interested in competing with the companies that make really great cathodes today, but is there something that's, you know, that should be the standard, you know, 10 years from now, that might be better? You know, so we do a little bit of research on that. We've got some government funding to look at that. But for now, we're, I'd say, pretty focused on just scaling the heck out of this anode technology.
Looking at the steps that you've already taken with anode technology, you mentioned that at the moment you stand at about a 20% efficiency increase of the entire battery. What are the next steps? Can you scale that even higher?
We put out, my CTO and I put out a white paper almost 2 years ago, a year and a half ago now, laying out kind of a roadmap for battery technology for the rest of this decade. And in it, we basically laid out where we think some of the really exciting things are. Continuing to improve the anode can get you closer to sort of 40% improvement. So just same technology, you know, but ever better products. That's in our plans. There's improvements in the separator, improvements in the cathode that could be had, improvements in the manufacturing processes. Overall, what we see is by the end of the decade, we think you can get to about a 2x improvement in energy density over the high nickel graphite state of the art that we've had. And we think that the cost can come down from, you know, around $100 per kilowatt hour down to around $50 per kilowatt hour by the end of the decade through those innovations. You need innovation to continue to drive down costs. Just scale sort of isn't enough. Scale is necessary, but it's not enough. And so there's any number of things from how the cell is assembled. You see like the 4680 form factor is, you know, potentially a more efficient, lower cost per kilowatt hour assembly form factor. There's going to be cathode improvements, separator improvements, electrolyte improvements. All of these things will sort of tie together to continue to bring down the upfront.
Nach einer kurzen Unterbrechung geht es gleich weiter. Bleiben Sie dran.
Bist du auf der Suche nach Inspiration und Netzwerkmöglichkeiten? Dann ist das Summer Camp der Handelsblatt Media Group genau das Richtige für dich. Treffe über 800 EntscheiderInnen, nimm an interaktiven Workshops teil und werde Teil der einzigartigen Camp-Community. Wir wollen gemeinsam mit dir die Zukunft unserer Wirtschaft gestalten und aktuelle Herausforderungen angehen. Erfahre mehr und sichere dir noch heute dein Ticket auf hmg-summercamp.de.
Cost and increased performance.
You're not the only company working on silicon anodes. There are a couple of other ones out there, Enovate, Enovix. What do you make of your competitors?
We're the only next-gen battery technology company that ships in the market today. We're really focused on running our own race. Until you ship something, like I said, you know, you're in that first stage, science. You know, we've cracked the second stage market and we're on to this third stage scale. We actually don't think of those companies as the competition. I think the way to look at it is we're all running the same race, but our competition is graphite and it's really, really far ahead. It has 99%+ of the market share today. And, you know, we don't sell against each other right now. There is not enough production capacity of any of these next generation technologies to be meaningfully competing with each other. You're really competing with graphite. And in the first question is, are you better than graphite for the cost and for the performance? And the only way to prove that is actually be in the market. So, you know, for the most part, you're right. It's a really challenging space. There will be, you know, there will ultimately be others that get into the market. But I think even when they do, even if we continue to scale at, you know, a huge pace, even with these 150 gigawatt hour plants that we want to put up around the world, you know, this will be kind of the first world scale plant. And then we want to replicate it in the US. We want to replicate it in Europe. We want to replicate it in Asia. Even with a few replications of this world scale plant, we'll still be a small percentage of the anode market. Graphite will still be the dominant anode material. And so I think as much as it's interesting to look at kind of, oh, that next technology or that other next gen technology, the real question is, you know, what's better than graphite? That's the real question.
One thing that was a little bit surprising to me is that the first companies, car makers that you announced were those two German ones, Mercedes and BMW, given that you and quite a few other people of your team basically came from Tesla. Are you already working with Tesla? Why isn't Tesla on the list?
You know, look, we work with quite a few other automakers. I can't comment on any specific ones. When the time comes, we'll announce others in the future. We're here to help everybody make the best electric vehicles in the world. We're not exclusive to those to two German car makers we've announced. They happen to come to us early in our development process. You know, we partnered with them sort of when they had the resources and they had the insight that this is the right direction. I'm sure you'll hear more from us on other car makers. Ultimately, our goal is to support all the automakers in making the best electric vehicles in the world.
Given that you have been in this industry for such a long time, what is, for me as somebody looking on the entire developments of a lot of technological products through time, so surprising is that in the battery industry, it seems as if innovation is much slower than in a lot of other parts of technological developments. Why is that the case?
So I have a pet theory. having worked in this space for 20 years now, I also used to think the batteries should be a lot easier than they really are. And the thing that I realized is, look at your phone. In your phone, there are two moving parts. There's the buttons and there's the battery. And what I mean by that is in the battery, every single day, a bunch of atoms, like 1 in 10 atoms, get up and out of their spot and go move 100 microns across the battery and recombine with other atoms. And you have to have that movement be entirely reversible and entirely damage-free to the device. Now, that's sort of not physically possible, so you tolerate a little bit of damage every single time. Everything else in your phone, your display, your microchip, all of these things, the only moving component, the only thing that moves in those is electrons and photons, and those carry no mass. And so the movement of mass in these devices causes all of these issues that are incredibly hard to rectify in a way that sort of most people don't really think about. They look at batteries as an electronic device. And one of the big challenges that comes from that is, simulation of this kind of stuff is nearly impossible. To simulate it, not at sort of an individual crystal, which you can have with sort of cobalt oxide or things like that, but these next generation materials, which aren't even crystalline, you can't really simulate it. You just have to test it empirically, and you have to do the science in many ways empirically. And so that makes it incredibly difficult. There's chemistry in there. There's electrochemistry in there. There's physics. There's mechanics. There's all of these different fields converging and at a level where you can't even see it with your naked eye. So I think that makes it really, really hard. The periodic table of elements is also just fundamentally small. There's just not that many places to go further lighter and further smaller than you have with lithium ion, right? Lithium is one of the smallest, lightest atoms. What we have to work with is just a much more limited set of things. And at the end of the day, that's what the universe gave us. So it is a really, really hard problem.
Just as a last question, is there one development that you're really excited about, something that's on the horizon where you basically say, oh yeah, this is going to be a next big step?
You mean besides our technology coming to the EV?
Besides what we talked about, yeah. Just looking a little bit further ahead.
I think the next big thing that will actually also be enabled by silicon, though today we mostly talk about higher energy density. We're starting to see results in our lab of fast charging in a way that, was kind of unimaginable with graphite anodes. So I think silicon anodes, as we start to develop their full potential, we're going to start to not only be able to increase the range of these vehicles, but just really meaningfully drop the charge rate. And there's a particular kind of car that I'd like to see built, and it'll probably happen in the second half of this decade, which is a fairly small car, a sort of a city car for European and other sort of urban markets that has, 400 plus miles of range. And to do that, you need a couple of things, not just 400 plus miles of range, but with fast recharge. I think a vehicle like that would entirely transform cities, because now you could own an electric car without having the infrastructure to charge it overnight, which is nearly, impossible, right, to install in a city like Munich or Stuttgart or, Berlin. And so if everyone could have a vehicle in a city setup that was perfectly clean, quiet, and you could basically drive it all week, and on the weekend, when you stop by the grocery store, recharge it in 15 minutes, I think that would completely transform cities. And it would it's this last piece that today the vehicles just aren't good enough, right? The range is small enough that you want to charge it overnight, or the battery just simply won't fit into a small city car, right? Or the vehicle has to be so large that you can't own it if you live in a high rise and with limited parking. So I think that to me, the enablement of fast charge coupled with this high energy density battery, we can see kind of some really transformative products in the way that sort of the Model S was transformative and the way that the Model 3 was transformative. They're sort of, the question is, what is that next kind of transformative vehicle that unlocks an entirely different segment of the market to convert to EV?
That was really, really interesting. Thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, thanks. Those are great, great questions and really appreciate them.
Und damit sind wir auch schon wieder am Ende von Handelsblatt Disrupt. Wie immer freuen wir uns über Kommentare in der Handelsblatt Disrupt LinkedIn-Gruppe. Sie können uns natürlich aber auch eine E-Mail schicken. Details dazu finden Sie in den Shownotes. Dank an dieser Stelle auch für die Unterstützung von Marcel Joschko und Benedikt Burkhardt, sowie Regina Körner und Migo Fecke von professionalpodcast.com, dem Dienstleister für Strategieberatung und Podcastproduktion. Wenn Sie grundsätzlich immer auf dem Laufenden bleiben wollen, dann testen Sie doch gerne mal unser Handelsblatt-Vorteilsangebot. Damit können Sie jederzeit alle Artikel lesen, ob es die aktuellen News aus Politik und Wirtschaft sind oder auch unsere Recherchen und Analysen im Archiv. Schauen Sie mal nach unter handelsblatt.com/mehrwirtschaft. Details finden Sie auch dazu nochmal in den Shownotes. Wenn Sie wollen, hören Sie gerne nächste Woche wieder bei uns rein. Bis dahin wünsche ich Ihnen schöne Sommertage und eine informative Zeit. Ihre Larissa Holzki.
Die deutsche Wirtschaft steht vor neuen Herausforderungen. Und Sie möchten aktiv die Zukunft mitgestalten? Dann sind Sie beim Handelsblatt CFO Summit 2024 genau richtig. Erleben Sie hochkarätige Speaker und CFOs renommierter Unternehmen wie Amazon, Google oder SAP. Seien Sie Teil dieses exklusiven Gipfeltreffens am 11. und 12. Juni in Düsseldorf. Mit dem Code PODCAST sparen Sie bei der Anmeldung 15%. Alle weiteren Infos unter handelsblatt-cfo-summit.de.